So I am a mental health specialist recovery worker, which, to be honest, is, I think, a role that I never expected to kind of get into. It's one of the things where it has like a nice, big, intimidating title, but then the work itself is actually quite not necessarily simple, but like if you have like good people skills and a good understanding of mental health, you can actually do quite a lot of good, which is nice. I'm also a well-being champion as a volunteer role, kind of on top of that, which is another thing I applied for, not expecting to get. So yeah, sorry, very common autistic thing that I've applied for things and then things have happened and now I don't know where I am or what I'm doing.
Like, how did this
And you
happen
kind of
to
just land on your feet. Yeah, literally, like I think it's kind of like a bit of a negative mindset that comes with it of like, I don't know what I'm doing in life, or like maybe it's the growing up disabled thing of like you're only expected to do a little and there aren't like high expectations put on you, but then being able to achieve it does feel quite good. And it feels quite good to actually be in a position where I'm helping people with difficulties that I can quite relate to be honest.
That's what I wanted to chat with you about this, because you were quite forthcoming in your piece that you did for the Friday News a few weeks back. And
Oh, that caused me so much anxiety.
oh really, I'm so sorry.
Go write something about yourself. No, not this. Just being asked to write up like a little paragraph about yourself. I can't do that for the life of me.
So of course this week is Neurodiversity Celebration Week, and that's the
Yep.
reason we wanted to have a look at this. So I interviewed a few people a couple of weeks ago. I actually did pop some questions into the
Yes,
calendar
I did see
entry.
that.
I don't know if you've seen them. I don't know whether they're appropriate or not, but I just sort of put them together this
I
morning.
thought they were quite appropriate for like kind of a very humane look at how we can actually be very inclusive in the workplace. Like, of what I read in there, like you honestly, what do they call it in the Equality Act? The reasonable adjustments, like communication preferences. I think communication, like in between people in general, should almost be approached in that way of how do you just prefer to be approached? I think for a lot of people, like sending an email back and forth is really easy. And then for some other people, there's a lot more anxiety that goes beneath that. And from what I've seen in my time in the U Trust, just face to face with people tends to work out the best for a lot of people within our organization. It's kind of like how some people prefer to leave voice notes, some people prefer to text. It's very much like communicating tone as well. You don't get tone for an email. You could send anything and read it in any way and just misinterpret it entirely.
And I think it also comes down to a lot of luck how you're feeling. If you've had a bad Monday morning kind of story and you're reading an email that might have been sent in a completely neutral way, you're going to put your own, you project your own
Absolutely.
emotions and anxieties onto that, of course.
Absolutely. I'm like that. What is it? I've got an appraisal coming up, and my immediate thought is, oh no, I'm in for it now, aren't I? But realistically, that's not actually going to happen. It is just a projection of like your previous thoughts and experiences. Like, I know a lot of people, especially within my field, find the idea of a meeting a bit, oh no, because we just don't work like that. We work person to person. So the idea of having to sit down, meet at a certain time, and have it very structured is there's a reason for that structure. Whereas in reality, it's just to coordinate people.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a good guys. We're in the same room together. Don't worry about anything else, kind of story. Actually, that is one of the nice things I like about working at the U Trust, is that it doesn't really feel too regimented in that way. I was working at in higher education beforehand, and when we had meetings, those were very formal, and you sort of had to sit there and talk in turn. It wasn't particularly friendly. It was quite
That sounds
stressful. It
horrendous.
was awful. It was
Absolutely
literally like
dread.
you have to like go in a circle. It was like, okay, now it's your turn, because the last person said really smart stuff. I don't have anything smart to say. It just makes it worse. And then the last person, of course, is really freaking up because all the good things have been said.
Yeah,
It's
that.
much nicer.
That isn't how people should communicate. Like, I understand it's one of our tenets, but just being human and just having that opportunity to kind of take away that sort of like pressure behind communication is so important, especially like for someone who's neurodiverse and communication is already like not necessarily challenging, but it provides its own unique challenges for them. Like, because what you've just described there would be awful for me because I need, if I have a thought in my head, it's loaded, it's got to go. And if someone else says it, the floor's just been lifted from beneath me.
What aspects of the office environment help you focus? Because I know that with some people who are, I don't know whether you get varying degrees of autism. I'm not quite sure of the terminology, because we used to use Asperger. My brother thought he was Asperger. I don't think you can use that anymore, or I don't know
No,
how
you
it's
can't.
shifted. Can you not? No.
Hans Asperger was directly funded by a certain party in Germany in between 1933 and 1945.
Oh, really? I did not
And
know that. Okay.
Asperger's is the okay form of autism under that understanding of psychology, which
Oh.
is a huge shame because Asperger's syndrome is what I was originally diagnosed with, and it's done a lot of good for identifying people who are higher functioning, perhaps. But autism is a spectrum and it's not a left to right spectrum. It's all over the place. Like, I've met people who have really bad sensory functions, but they hold down a job, they act like a complete normal person. Just can't eat anything other than beige food, or they need to avoid really busy areas. And you just kind of wouldn't know. You'd think maybe they're a bit shy. It also feeds into our modern understanding of like diagnosing people in between the ages of like 1 to 13 and then having a huge skip from 30 onwards, because a lot of people in the older generation didn't have access to like the SAADR, which is your modern diagnostics. So you end up with like, if you've ever met like someone in their 30s, 40s who's just really into Star Trek, they're a bit nerdy and they just kind of go around things. There's a, yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right. I'm one of those people where I had to chat to my dad and one of my elderly neighbors because they were both like, yeah, I saw a show about autism and I think I might have it. And all of a sudden you just have these people cropping up, because for some people it's just unnoticeable. Maybe they just have certain quirks that they're just unaware of. And on the other end, you end up with people where it's more considered your classical disability, where they won't be able to do things and they will really struggle in your day-to-day activities or to communicate at all. And that's kind of the nature of autism. It's an absolute, like, it's like throwing out a dartboard. You could end up anywhere on it with like varying different aspects. So when we actually apply it to the workplace and like different needs, honestly, I think simple, reasonable adjustments. I've never worked in an office because I just couldn't handle that. The idea of like perhaps bright lights, busy environments aren't for me. But working in a care home where it is still a busy environment and it's not set, I'm not needed to sit at a desk, I'm not needed to necessarily do specific things unless it's needed for that, works really well for me because it's fluid. Maybe I'm talking to one of my lovely residents and we're just going downtown for a chat. It's structured and like pre-planned in a way where I can predict what's going to happen, but not necessarily in a way where it's chaotic.
Yeah, I can understand, yeah.
But on the other end of that spectrum, someone may just prefer an office where it's set, it needs to look like this, I know what I'm doing every single day, and that's quite reasonable within itself. I think, this is going to sound really weird, the best piece of sensory equipment I've ever seen when I was doing my university thing, is I was having an interview with someone for my dissertation, and they just pulled out a set of tinted like sunglasses and went, these are lifesavers, because it just stops glare and sunlight, and that was like, done, their sensory needs were completely met.
Oh, wow, okay, yeah. I think for people who are outside the world or not involved in the care side of it, they have a lot of preconceived ideas. And as you mentioned, I know, like with the Star Trek and stuff like that, like my older brother, as I mentioned, was diagnosed with Asperger's. Very interesting what you said about that. I must do some reading, actually, about the original terminology. Very interesting. And I mean, he was in the army. He was sort of high functioning, he was part of the UN, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's not like what you see on, I don't know, what's that? That movie with Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman.
Rain Man?
Rain Man, yes. Because you get that sort of side of things where, because it's an extreme, it obviously makes it into mainstream media. What are your thoughts of that, actually, in the way that the world is looking at it? And with a week like Neurodiversity Celebration Week, what are your sort of thoughts on that, on how things maybe are changing or maybe they're not changing fast enough?
So I think, like, referring to autism in media, it is very much everywhere, like, whether it's easy to notice or not in, like, the way that certain characters behave. I would say, as you're a Trekkie, I'd say data is probably a pretty good representation of what you would stereotypically think an autistic person is. They deal in absolutes. They're very intelligent. But the other half of that is they're just warlike within their crew. Everyone kind of knows this guy and knows what to expect. The same with, is it the Vulcans? I always get them confused.
The Vulcans are the spot guys. Logic
above everything.
Yes, that's good, Vulcans, yeah.
That's also very much within that same stereotype. But referring to Rain Man, I remember watching
it's interesting, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a representation of what's called savantism. It's kind of like an incredibly rare aspect of autism. In the same way, like, autism is a just throwing at a darts board, someone with savantism could be incredibly challenged within just daily living. But they'll just be able to tell you, like, that, just numbers, maths, science, any of, like, their special interest. I think there was a show back on in the 2012s where she put a showcase on this, where this bloke, he had to live with his mum because he really struggled with his physical needs. But then you could just mention a random date to him and he'd be able to figure out the surrounding events just by memory. It's one of those things, there's no real bias almost within the autistic condition as to how far it goes. But what the media portrays is certain extremes. They'll almost romanticize the intelligence and this really strange idea of autistic people as, okay, this is going to sound weird. Have you ever seen the show Monk?
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to sort of go to. The
sort
of social interactions are unusual or slightly weird, but they're all higher functioning as far as a sort of brain capacity or IQ for that matter. Like, I just finished watching a show called The Red Queen. It's a Spanish show on Netflix. On Amazon, sorry, apologies. Oh. And she's got an IQ of 242. And she has exactly the same sort of mannerisms of what you would expect to see in the media and how these things are sort of incorrectly portrayed. I mean, I don't know whether you see it or whether you have people saying, oh, he's autistic, he must be smart. I don't know if that is something that maybe I'm...
I don't help myself, I'm afraid. I do try to be humble. No, I will just quickly say IQ is a very dated concept.
Oh, I don't know.
130 is like meaningless. Yeah. I've done them myself and I'm like 180 something. And of course, it's not really that representative. Because if you put an actual problem in front of me, I might just freeze up.
That's the thing, is I've done these things before, and I'm like, a puzzle? What? But meanwhile, back in the room, I'm pretty good with other things. You know? So,
yeah, exactly. Like, it's not representative of, like, a full kind of, like, capability of what we would, consider intelligent. Because, again, I've met people on the spectrum who are fantastic at certain things. I have been to a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament, and my God, the things I've seen there are horrendous. But that's the sort of thing that you'll see. It's they're very good in this one area and then they might struggle in other areas themselves. I mean, just day-to-day living skills, I don't think many neurotypical people kind of understand that you need to then manage that on top of your condition, because you will be expected to do more things if you're higher functioning, which isn't always possible.
And can you give me some examples actually of that, because that is a really interesting sort of idea. Like, do they, are there higher expectations, or you could just quicker?
So within my own personal experience, I was not able to get on a bus until I was at least 18.
Because
the idea of such a filled environment with lots of people where it's very unpredictable was just too much for me to do. So I would walk everywhere, trains I could manage, which doesn't help the stereotype, but it was a thing that was kind of expected because I looked normal, I sounded normal, and I had a job at the time that I just do this thing that I myself consider normal. And it's always been the, can't do that. And the moment you take that step back and say, look, for myself, I can't do this thing, or I need to find an alternate route, people kind of then shift that expectation they put on you. Because it's, are they actually normal? It's like, I think for a lot of people, it's kind of holding a double thought. This person is normal and is capable. Simultaneously, this person struggles with things, which I think everyone struggles with things. Like, you get people claustrophobia, you get people who just don't like loud environments, which is a perfectly normal thing and very acceptable. But then when it comes to a realm of neurodiversity, it is immediately put on the disability rather than the person, if that makes sense.
People are kind of pigeonholing you, you've got your little slot there. Oh, you know, James can't do that because, as opposed to actually he's, or just to somebody like myself, I hate picking up the telephone. It's, you can't put that in a pigeonhole because I haven't been, you know, diagnosed with autism or neurodivergent. That's another thing, actually, that I saw when I was doing some research for this week, is the sort of timeline that it takes to get diagnosed with whether you are neurodivergent and stuff. What experience have you had in that? Because, I mean, I've seen that there are the waiting line queues for like years to be diagnosed.
So I was very fortunate that my uncle is autistic and I have a great aunt who is on the spectrum. Not that my family talked much about that, but the moment like my mother thought something was up with me, she pushed for me to get diagnosed, and it took between the ages of, I think, 5 to 6. I've read through my own paperwork. It was absolutely fascinating. I was a weird kid.
That must be like quite scary, actually, like reading a diary from somebody when you're 5 years old.
Quite literally. But after that, I got diagnosed, and then it was a really weird experience. And I really enjoy talking about this because it's odd to put in people's perspectives. I was then at an age of about 8. It was put into kind of, oh, we need to change this guy's education. So I went from being in normal classes and put in special education ones. And when you're at the age of 8, you don't really think about it. You're just like, oh yeah, that's like my buddy Lewis. Like, we're in class together sometimes. And then they put in the SEN sort of like styled emotion classes. And it was just kind of a shell shock. I was like, why am I being taken out of art class? I like this one. And now I'm being put in one to talk about what faces mean, what emotions.
Oh, wow, really? Hey, that is quite a change. Jeez.
It is. And I've worked in a primary school before this current position, and like seeing how that's changed is good, but the diagnosis route for ADHD, autism, and anything of that nature has become incredibly backed up. And I know I don't agree with it. Within the modern DSM, a lot of neurodivergents are now considered overdiagnosed. Are they overdiagnosed, or have we just accepted that the threshold for what means that someone's neurodiverse is actually a lot shallower than we thought it was initially? What autism's a syndrome, so it's a collection of different facets that make up what autism is. But this overlaps with ADHD, ADD, OCD aspects, things like dyscalculia, dyspraxia, dyslexia, and it just feeds into all these other things. I mean, something I didn't expect is hypermobility is incredibly co-occurring. So now that we're diagnosing all these little things and like noticing these things in people, especially in young women, I've noticed it's really good that they're more getting diagnosed now, and it's more
seen. It was kind of the other side of things. It was always the guys that had it. I've also read a few studies, not studies, but sort of brief abstracts of the studies on why that might be the case, which is also kind of fascinating sort of realm. So do you think, I mean, you do mention a very interesting thing, because I've seen arguments that say that we are just basically labeling everybody who sneezes as having a neurodivergent issue or syndrome. Do you think there's sort of a move away from that, or do you think it's getting better diagnosed? I mean, yeah, what is the state of the landscape, I suppose, at the moment, do you think?
The diagnosis has never been better. The capacity to get that diagnosis has never been worse.
Okay.
I think is kind of the extremes that we're sitting at. It's nice that, especially with older people, like, because my research was around adolescents, the moment you hit off from at 13, you will not be diagnosed until you hit higher age or if something crops up. Okay. So a lot of people are going... It's just where it's focused, because we think mostly of autism within institutions like education, because it is a learning disability. So that's where you want to get in. You want to try and upskill people in that area and figure out what can and can't be done with them. But then it doesn't happen until later. I think hopefully universities are stepping up and being like, oh yeah, this person's clearly here because they have a hyperfixation. Let's support that. But the other side of that is there, and this is something I do think about a lot, is there actually a need for a diagnosis if someone just doesn't need it? I think a lot of people that I've met with a diagnosis of autism later in life, where they've upskilled, developed coping mechanisms, you wouldn't really know. They've been like, yeah, I kind of don't want it.
Yeah, that's exactly like with my brother too. I mean, he was, as I say, in an army with weapons around him kind of story. He thought he was completely okay with this. And it was the external people who were saying, well, you're obviously this because of this particular reason. He didn't really appreciate that. It is interesting, because on the flip side of things, I do see things on TikTok, for example, which is a different realm altogether, where people...
Yeah, I feel like there's an entire different discussion around self-diagnosis.
That's where I was about to head to.
Trendiness.
Yes, that's a superpower. Thanks, Marvel.
I appreciate and disappreciate the autism as a superpower, because it's partially correct. But when your superpower is knowing all the lore behind a video game or something, it's kind of hard to appreciate that within yourself.
Fair.
I'm just very fortunate my hyperfixation is mental health and I can put it into action. But I have met many people where it's been elsewhere or not been as applicable, and they have all this passion and energy, and they're like, God, I wish I could put this in the real world.
That's cute. But yeah, just going back to like the whole TikTok thing, because to me, and I have seen a lot of this with usually with my younger brothers, their friends, their younger friends, and it is sort of obscuring, I suppose, the work that has been done and the progress that's been done, because you do have a younger generation of literal people who put on tics, like Tourette's kind of story, because they think it's cool for the hits kind of thing. Any sort of opinions on that? Because, I mean, I'm sure you would have heard about it a bit more than I mean. I don't use TikTok just because I think it's really my kind of...
No, it's perfectly understandable. And it is very... You are right. It does kind of confuse things for some people. They'll start... Because the moment you start putting things out there, like, you may have a thing, a lot of people do question it in themselves. And with the trendiness, seeing it everywhere, especially, like, within media, I can understand why people would then do that and then engage in that and then maybe self-diagnose. I can understand the feeling and the sort of like want behind it. But then the other half of that is you're throwing yourself in with a bunch of people who already really struggle to find community and belonging, and are kind of trying to give it out to people and be like, no, it's fine. You can be a part of this, while also not recognizing that the other half of that is maybe being part of the support that's given. It's almost like we need like almost like an ally state for some people who think, yeah, I kind of vibe with this. So we're not discluding people who are developing skills to help people within that community just by being a part of it. Because you are, like, understanding is like a huge part of it as well. Like, it would have been nicer in my younger years if people went, you know, I think I'm a bit autistic. I understand why you can't get on a bus, rather than, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
Bit of a tirade there.
No, that was really, really good. So I was just putting my mic on mute because some people are very loud. It's an absolutely fascinating thing. And I do like the fact that we have weeks like this that bring people's attention to it and sort of help dispel rumors and, you know, things that aren't true. Because, again, as I mentioned, with sort of younger generations in particular, I do see a lot online because I spend a lot of my time online. It's part of my job. With new, you know, ideas that have been disproven long time ago, suddenly re-emerging because of new narratives that are sort of fed through channels like TikTok. You know?
Like, after COVID, the MMR stuff all resurfaced. It's something I noticed. Like, because this sort of like cynicism around like vaccines came about, all of Mr. Wakefield's research all kind of resurfaced overnight. And it was kind of, well, it makes sense. People are going to get health anxieties and be worried about things. But at the same time, like, that was disproved a while ago. From my research, most autistic people, they're not like stuck like that forever. They'll figure things out as they go. I can't do this. Oh, I can do that instead. Or I can manage this feeling this way. Or kind of just, again, coping mechanisms is my little area of speciality. That's what I research. They just learn ways around it. I can't go into a shop when it's full. All right, I'll come back at a different time. That's why I love working shifts, because I can go to a shop on a Monday morning and then find out that everyone goes to Aldi on a Monday morning and it's just worse.
So how does the coping mechanism thing work? That's quite an interesting, it's obviously your specialty, as you've mentioned now. How does that work then? And it doesn't vary greatly, obviously, with different people. I mean,
it very much doesn't. It's very personalized. So if we look at coping mechanisms, there's not too much research out there, unfortunately, but it's a developed technique. So, you know, with like boxed breathing for anxiety or compartmentalization, it is a little bit of cognitive behavioral therapy in a way, but it's also like your exposure therapies, the same way you'd approach a phobia. Because realistically, what most people with autism struggle with is the anxiety around things. Going into a crowded place is incredibly hard. But when I have a thick jacket on and I'm compressed, which is fulfilling a sensory need that may be neglected by another sensory, it's not so bad because it becomes manageable. And realistically, that's what a coping mechanism is there for. It makes something that's unmanageable manageable. Taking yourself away from like a busy area, or maybe breaking down what could be a really overwhelming activity into little steps. That's something I very much do in my day-to-day life. And I think a lot of people do it and just don't talk about it. Yeah, I have a piece of paper that needs to be done. It's 20 pages. But if I think about it, if I do like a page, take a break, do something else and mix it up, it's not 20 pages. It's one page and then doing something else. And it'll be done in like an hour. And it's not that bad all of a sudden, if that makes sense.
You said you'd done research. Sorry, what did you actually do? Was it a degree?
I have a degree in psychology. I'm very proud of it because, just like as I was saying at the start, I never expected to kind of get into this job. Never expected to get into university either. I got in on clearing as well, which probably didn't help. I wrote up a dissertation about 3 years back in adolescence and coping mechanisms. And the idea that, why does autism start disappearing after the age of 13? And my thesis was that people do develop these things and the higher functioning people just kind of blend in. But what I really found from my research is the struggle doesn't really stop. It changes because it goes from, I need to go to school, I need to do something really regimented, to I need to get a job, I need to go to university, I need to figure out what sort of person I am, which came up a lot. And autism as an identity also came up a lot within the research I did. I think 50% of my participants said they legit just wanted a cure, which was very saddening, to be honest. But I also can very much empathize with that situation because they don't see necessarily the superpower side of it because they live it every day and it kind of goes to the wayside. But the other half of my research was, I've gone from this point where I couldn't do this and this and this to, I figured it out. I've got it under wrap. I can hold down a job. I have a social group and quite an enriched life. And that's why the diagnosis disappears. I no longer need to be diagnosed because I have these things under wraps. It's only when they're out of that people then need the support later in life.
You said that you never even had expected to go to university. Was there a like a, I don't want to say a negative environment around you that made you think that, or was it just purely on the basis that you were diagnosed with autism and so automatically you thought, okay, I won't be going to university? What was the reasoning and how did that change?
So earlier when I said I like to break down my tasks, there's a one task in my life I cannot break down, that's sitting down for an hour-long exam, because the reasonable adjustments were never put in place for me early in life. A lot of people, where they saw me, went, oh, he's fine. And unfortunately, I played into that because it's, oh, I don't have autism. No, I'm a normal person and I can do normal things. Don't treat me like that. And then by pushing so far against the support that I could have had as a sort of like negative thing about me, which it wasn't in reality, it was people trying to be nice, I then pushed back. So I never got the support in my exams. So going forward, everything was like by the skin of my teeth. And I was like, university going to be exactly the same. And no, it wasn't actually. And I kind of started accepting support after that.
That is brilliant. Enough, that
it
is...
went way better. Didn't want to be treated a certain way. Mm. And unfortunately, part of that was shoving it all away, which as an adult and not a stroppy teenager who wanted to define themselves, I kind of see both sides of that. I can see how the support was infantilizing. It made me feel like I couldn't do things for myself. So it felt great to do things for myself. But then when I struggled with things, the help just wasn't there.
What would you say as, you know, for this week, a message to other people in this organization and other organizations about making their life easier to work in the place? I mean,
it's about being patient, listening, trying things out. And when they don't work out or maybe they aren't effective, revisiting and reflecting, just like anyone else, someone with a neurodiverse condition, they know what they need help with. They just might struggle to communicate it, and just take that time with them, because you could have one of the best workers you've ever come across just underneath you, just because they're struggling with how like bright the lights are or how busy the environment is. And just taking that little bit of time and working with them, it will just be better for everyone involved and it'll make everyone